corners. Well, briefly leave the hearing, a couple of minutes to set the stop up. This one, you're on next.
Thank you.
There's
no one from the
platform. Yes, the strength.
So, hopefully we have received everything that we've pretty much had an opportunity to read it.
Yes.
I had a summary of my legal position here. Following evidence has been pre-lodged for QAC, evidence from Trubitschka, General Manager of Property, QAC, Chris Day, Acoustic Engineer, John Carl Taylor. These witnesses are present today to provide a summary of the evidence and to answer any questions the panel may have. Queenstown Airport is a significant strategic resource and is a fundamental part of the social and economic well-being of the district's community. The airport has been experiencing significant growth in aircraft operations over recent years. International and domestic passenger numbers have increased by 38% in the last 3 years alone. For the 12-month period ending June this year, passenger numbers reached 1.89 million, up 15% compared to the previous 12 months. Current demand forecasts predict that annual passenger numbers have the potential to increase from 1.8 million this year to 3.2 million by 2025. QAC is currently undertaking master planning work for the airport, which will consider, amongst other issues, forecast growth in passenger numbers in the aircraft operations and how or to what extent this is to be accommodated at Queensland Airport. Relevant to this hearing, QAC opposes various rezoning requests that would enable ASAN in areas that are or are likely to be affected by moderate levels of aircraft noise now or in the future. QAC's submission addresses both land within and beyond the PC35 OTB. QAC thinks that the rationale underpinning PC35 is upheld in the proposed plan, and having regard to the predicted growth in aircraft operations, that potential future aircraft noise effects are properly considered and accounted for when assessing and deciding rezoning requests under the flight path, including the land located beyond the OTB. The reasons for QAC's submission are twofold: to ensure that adverse amenity effects on persons working or residing in these areas are avoided, and to ensure that the airport is protected against potential reverse sensitivity effects. Amenity effects are costs borne by landowners under flight paths and are recognised under Section 7 of the RMA. A reverse sensitivity effect is a cost borne by the airport and also the wider community. These are costs that must be weighed in the Section 32 evaluation of the proposed plan and submissions on it, and are highly relevant to the assessment under Part 2 of the Act. While it is incumbent under the RMA that adverse environmental effects of an activity be avoided, remedied or mitigated by the person carrying out the activity, it is generally accepted that some key physical resources, such as airports, cannot, in practical terms, internalise all adverse effects. The concept of resource sensitivity recognises this. The concept of reverse sensitivity includes and indeed focuses on potential and future effects. Its focus is to ensure that actual effects are avoided via appropriate land use planning decisions. The concept also encapsulates an existing activity's future operations, including future upgrades and development. The inability to grow as planned because of public pressure arising from complaints can be considered a reverse sensitivity effect. The concept is therefore forward-looking. It is inherent in dealing with a potential future scenario, and that a reverse sensitivity effect has the potential to eventuate if, in the future, over time, complaints lead to the curtailment of the existing activities operations. This accords with the forward-looking nature of the RMA, which is reflected in the focus in Section 5 on providing for future generations, and in Section 3 definition of effect, which includes future and potential effects. QAC opposes rezoning or upzoning requests relating to land within the PC35 OCB so as to ensure that the Environment Court approved land use planning rationale is not eroded. By way of background, PC35 was initiated by QAC and adopted by the Council around 2008 and sought to rationalise and update the noise management regime that applied to Queensland Airport while providing for the then predicted ongoing growth in aircraft operations and protecting the airport from reverse sensitivity effects and also avoiding adverse amenity effects on people residing around the airport. PC35 is predicated on NZS 605, which is widely accepted as an appropriate basis for land use planning around New Zealand's airports. Specifically, for land where there was no existing expectation or right of asset development, for example within the rural zone, PC35 sought to prohibit such development. For land subject to an existing development right or expectation, for example the residential zone, PC35 sought to permit new asset development, only where appropriately insulated from aircraft noise so as to achieve an acceptable internal noise environment. This moderated approach recognised and grandfathered existing development and associated zoning for residential purposes that had occurred in close proximity to the airport, but precluded new SN development from establishing in these areas where there was no previous right or expectation of such development. No submitter has seriously challenged the continuation of the PC35 approach in the proposed plan, and the Council supports it, and it does so except in relation to its own submission, in respect of which the Section 42A report is notably silent on the aircraft noise issue. And Mr. Kyle, I'll make some comments on that in the details also. It is submitted that in the absence of any cogent evidence to the contrary which challenges the validity of PC35 or the appropriateness of its continuation in the proposed plan, the panel should accept QAC's submission and its evidence in respect of rezoning requests within the SED. QAC opposes rezoning requests that would enable new ASAN on land located beyond the PC35 OCB in areas that may be affected by moderately high levels of aircraft noise in the future. QAC submission is forward-looking in this respect and takes account of the sustained growth in aircraft operations and passenger numbers that the airport has continued to experience since PC35 was promulgated, and the current indications that aircraft noise at Queensland Airport will likely reach the PC35 noise boundary earlier than originally predicted. QAC's submission was criticised by the Council and some considered as being inconsistent with PC35 and without any legal basis. Those criticisms are not accepted. QAC's submission is consistent with PC35. It seeks to ensure protection of people's immunity and of the airport against potential reverse sensitivity effects by grandfathering existing SN development, but precluding new SN development in areas where there is no previous development right or expectation. Additionally, while QAC's submission addresses land beyond the current OCB, QAC's evidence is that the noise levels permitted by that boundary will likely be reached earlier than originally anticipated, and that it is reviewing its noise boundaries and will progress changes to the noise planning framework if required in due course. This evidence should not be ignored or QAC's submission rejected simply because there is currently no proposal on foot to expand the noise boundary. It is submitted that it is entirely appropriate and responsible that QAC has presented this evidence to the panel, even though there is currently no proposal before the Council to alter the PC35 noise boundary, because the proposed plan will be in effect for many years and land use planning decisions, particularly decisions that enable residential or other noise-sensitive land use around an airport, can be irreversible. Conversely, it is submitted it would be a failure in terms of the Council's functions and duties under the RMA and this panel's delegated functions as relevant to overlook or ignore QAC's evidence on this issue. Further, it should be remembered that PC35 was formulated in 2008, almost 10 years ago now. It was the result of master planning work undertaken at the time, which was informed by various forecasts and technical reports prepared by highly qualified experts. Those reports were tested in two RNA forums. TC35 was therefore a product of the best available expert and technical information at the time. However, land use planning is not and should not be static, particularly in this district. And since TC35 was formulated, actual growth has outstripped projections. It is admitted that accepting QAC's submission in respect of rezoning requests beyond the OCB is not disenabling because this land has not historically been available for SAN development of the nature or density requested by submitters. Additionally, for the majority of this land, aircraft noise is not the only constraint to SAN development, and in most cases there are other significant constraints that would need to be overcome before such development could proceed. QAC's submission can be considered enabling in that it conserves development options for the future and for future generations if growth in aircraft operations does not materialise as currently predicted, for example. QAC's submission carries with it the significant benefit of future-proofing the regionally significant infrastructure and physical resource that is Queensland Airport. These benefits have local, regional and national significance. It is submitted that the relief sought by QAC is the most appropriate, particularly given that no evidence has been presented of a pressing need to enable SAN development on land in this noise area, nor any evidence presented as to a shortage of residential land within the district generally. And in conclusion, Queensland Airport is a significant strategic physical resource which brings significant economic and social benefits to the community that ought to be protected, as should the amenity of future generations. The continued growth and development of the airport enables the wider community to provide for its social and economic well-being in particular, and for its health and safety. The risks or costs of not accepting QAC submission are that the growth and development of Queenstown Airport is unduly constrained, with significant flow-on effects for the wider community's economic and social well-being, in addition to the adverse and immediate effects experienced by persons residing under the airport's flight path. Ultimately, the panel must determine whether the purpose of the Act, including Sections 5 and 7, is better achieved by enabling new or intensified SAN development in areas that are currently or in the light in the future will be affected by moderately high levels of aircraft noise. With the attendant amenity and potential reverse sensitivity costs, or by not enabling SAN development within these areas. It is submitted that the relief sought by QAC is clearly the most appropriate, as any alternative decision comes with environmental costs in terms of amenity and potential reverse sensitivity effects, which cannot be avoided or otherwise addressed.
Am I correct that the conditions attached to the designation listed in section 37 of the proposed plan are consistent with those imposed as part of the notice of requirements in plan change 35?
Yes.
Right. And condition 6 says the airport shall be managed so that the launch of aircraft operations does not exceed 65 dBm LDN outside the airways boundary or 55 DBL LDN outside the air control area.
Yes.
That's correct. That is shown on the district plan.
Yes.
And those are the ones that by submission we sought to be included.
Yes.
If the airport was to not comply with that, they'd be in breach of the RMA, wouldn't they?
Yes, correct.
And liable to prosecution by anyone. So why is it you're asking us to consider noise effects which are contrary to the provisions of the RMA in looking at zoning of land outside the OCB?
I'm not asking you to consider that. My position is that the airport is growing at a rate faster than anticipated when TC35 was promulgated. QAC accepts that if it is to continue that growth, or if that growth is to be accommodated, that before the noise boundaries are reached, or noise limits reached in those noise boundaries, it will need to authorise that increased noise in some way or another, either plan change or a notice of requirement to alter its designation, and that will be subject to a public RMA process.
And what if the council says no?
Well,
the district may decide that the level of activity that's allowed now is it.
Yes, correct. It might do, but also it might not. And QAC is flagging very responsibly that this is something that may well be considered in the not too distant future, and that it shouldn't be ignored simply because there is currently no proposal on foot.
But isn't it pie in the sky? You can't point us to anything. Yes, well, I've written, well, I agree with you about how useful comes out of the title, but...
Well, unfortunately, my position summarises Trigutu's evidence. QAC is undertaking master plan work at this point in time and is looking at these noise issues. But the timing is not aligned, and this hearing process is taking place before QAC completed that work. But it's not time to guide stuff.
Well, in reading Ms. Pregnita's evidence, there's nothing in there that points to the noise effects of the scheduled services causing reverse sensitivity effects. So even if we were to take into account some ephemeral potential or possible future growth scenario, there's no evidence that is actually the problem she identified in her evidence. Helicopters and flight planes and quail rides.
Well, that's the evidence given in respect of complaints, but that's not to say. I think that Mr. Day and Mr. Carl will both give evidence that worldwide there is a lot of experience with complaints from scheduled aircraft.
But there's no experience of that here.
Well, I couldn't answer that.
Not in the evidence.
Well, no, not in the evidence, but there's also it's resolved PC35, there's a complaint process, and so complaints might be dealt with in a different way. But this is about potential effects as well. So because there hasn't been, and perhaps that suggests that the current regime has been working quite well, QAC is looking to the future and endeavouring to protect the airport.
You seem to place a lot of reliance in your submissions on the Robinson Bay Trust case in Christchurch for this concept of future protection and not sterilising land. Is that a fair appraisal?
Well, I certainly refer to that case in my submissions.
It seems to me that we're not talking similar things here. In that case, the court was discussing whether 50 dBA or 55 dBA was the appropriate boundary. And the land that was affected already had a number of potential uses that it could occur that weren't hindered, such as rural residential development, didn't they?
Well, I'm not entirely sure that a large part of the land affected by Christchurch Airport's noise boundaries is rural.
Yes, that is agreed, and the court was quite clear in its decision. I mean, I read it last night when I was flying back to Houston Airport that the land affected could be subdivided to rural residential development, and maybe 4 acre lots and things like that, and they could have houses on it. It's quite different from the rural zone regime in this district.
The point of referring to the Robertson Stay case is not to present a similar fact scenario, simply to make the point that the court has recognised that noise was experienced beyond the 55, and that noise levels out to the 50 dBIU can be considered an immunity effect under the RMA, and in the Christchurch circumstance, the court considered it appropriate to regulate and limit development and to protect the airport. So,
but that's not your case here, is it?
Well, we're not seeking to protect out to the PC35. We're not seeking to, I suppose, impose a de facto OCB that's based on 50. Mm. But I think it's the Robertson Bay case is of some relevance, because it highlights that even if, as you say, QAC's forecast growth of pine in the sky stuff and is not going to ever come to pass, that the court has in the Christchurch scenario determined that protection out to the 50 is appropriate. So even if the growth didn't transpire at Queensland Airport, which I think is highly unlikely, that protection out to the 50 is not without precedent.
Being hard done by that, there was ample residential land all around to provide for the growth of Christchurch, and Christchurch could actually afford to use that.
Well, I'm not sure that that's any different. In this case, the council's development capacity evidence is that there is ample evidence and no further needs to be zoned in order to meet the national policy statement on urban development capacity.
And so much of that land is in on the fence and steps.
Some of them are in fact in flats, but the airport is not seeking to preclude the development of that land. The airport is not seeking to limit existing development rights. I'm to protect the airport by nominating additional developments in areas where that development hasn't historically been
permitted. Yeah, I'm struggling to see the significance of the 50 dBIU in the Christchurch problem.
Well, no, that's correct. As I said earlier, the point of the Robinson Bay case is that noise is an immunity effect, noise beyond the 55 is an immunity effect, and it's a effect that must be properly taken into account under the Resource Management Act. But nor is it here, in the sense that the council has presented evidence that there is sufficient residential land to cater for this district's growth over the next 30 years. Well, it's not. I've read the evidence presented by submitters, and I don't think it is challenged seriously by any submitter.
In paragraphs 24 through to 27, we seem to be saying that the long-term view of the airport requires changes to the land around. Does the airport company take a long-term view of control of noise from the airport?
Can you please rephrase that question?
Please. Well, in paragraph 34 you say QAC's submission takes a long-term view of growth data around the airport in this regard. Does QAC equally take a long-term view of controlling noise at the airport?
I'm sorry, I'm not clear on your question about
that. Maybe I'll ask it a different way. If we refer to paragraph 36, where you talk about maintaining the status quo, how would Queenstown Airport feel about maintaining the status quo in terms of the noise produced at the airport?
Well, that
role,
isn't it meant to be a to answer your question, QAC is, as I said previously, accepts that it will need to go through a public RMA process in order to accommodate further growth, and at that point the community will provide its views on whether it wants to see the growth at the airport and the extent to which it needs to, it should be accommodated. But that is until that process is commenced and the community's views are known. QAC is planning for the future based on the information it has before it. And bearing in mind that it is a significant contributor to this district's economic and social well-being and facilitates a huge amount of economic activity and tourism in the district, which keeps this economy going. So if a decision is made to...
But we're not talking about closing down the airport, are we? We have growth until we meet the existing defined contours.
At that point,
you don't have any economic evidence presented to say that there will be dire effects on district beyond that point, do you?
No, but I don't think it's a particularly giant leap to do that.
So, I don't know what the number of future flights would be within the contours, because no one's ever bothered to give us an approximate number. But if it's twice what we have at the moment, and it stops at twice what we have at the moment, where's the economic evidence of the consequences of that?
Well, I'm not sure that the assumption that it's twice is a correct one.
Well, that's because no one did tell us. We have to make a guess because the airport company, when asked, has never been able to tell us where we are in that progression.
Well, you're correct in that there is no economic evidence that has been presented to QAC to demonstrate that there will be dire consequences to the district community if growth at the airport stagnates, you know, reaches its noise boundaries. But equally, there is no evidence to say that there won't be dire effects. And QAC's submission is that, given the growth that is taking place and is forecast, a precautionary approach should be taken in circumstances where there is no demonstrated need to zone land in these non-protected areas, where there is adequate land elsewhere.
Okay. Now I'd like to raise a couple of specific examples with you. We've had submissions regarding One Henson Road, that is the land which is zoned local shopping centre between Henson Road and Franklin Cemetery.
Can you just tell me who that submitter is?
Now a different name. Yes, it's Farms was the previous one, yes.
Is that the one called Staff Accommodation Property Submissions or something?
Something like that.
We've got new information last week.
Now, we were advised that there's been a 10 lot residential subdivision approved on that site, which is pretty much totally off of the OCD. So, am I to presume, or are we to presume, that the airport company is happy with that?
I'm not familiar with that proposal, and Mr. Carr might be able to assist you further with that question.
If we go to the land across the road from that, it's owned by Grants, that's the one in the apex of the triangle. So again, it's almost entirely within the OCD. What realistic and practical use does the airport company conceive could occur on that land?
Well, it could be anything that is not the most sensitive. For example, it could be commercial or business, industrial.
So as far as the airport is concerned, it doesn't consider any constraints other than asset.
From the airport's perspective, yes. No, the airport hasn't looked at the other constraints because it's not bothered by them. The airport's focus isn't on a particular zoning, it's on what is enabled within that zone.
Just turning to your discussion of reverse sensitivity. The way you've described it, it's when you've got an activity which is producing, in this example, noise, and someone moves to the noise. Does it continue to be reverse sensitivity when the person's moved there and then the noise increases beyond that provided for in the plan?
Well, the case law suggests that, yes, it might do, and that's the Port of Auckland case where the court for the Auckland court the High Court. That reverse sensitivity could arise where complaints inhibit the sensible development of the port residents inhibit the sensible development of the port by opposing future planning applications. So that was very forward looking in that regard. The sensible development of an existing activity where that is inhibited as a result of people moving to the effect and not liking what's going on, then that can be considered a reverse sensitivity effect in the High Court's view.
Okay. You have any questions? Yes, I think the original commission that paragraph 164, the entire paragraph was trustful. But it really arises paragraph 164. And there is no jurisdiction to the Council of Planning Control on the end use beyond the OCP for aircraft noise related reasons, provided they're satisfied. I mean, that's a general statement. What, apart from the Christchurch example where you have a different level for the LBN or whatever, what else might you do? What else might the Council do? What else would the airport ask them?
Well, just to clarify, this submission of paragraph 154 was in direct response to the incorrect statement made by Ms. Hutton, which was legally incorrect. QAC is not here speaking.
Its case is pointing to zoning, the upper end zoning or whatever.
Yes, that submission was in response to the incorrect legally incorrect statement made by Ms. Hutton. Beyond the OCB, I think the Mr. Jay can probably assist further, but there is little point, as I understand it, in mitigating by acoustic insulation or mechanical ventilation, mitigating dwellings, because a stock standard new build will achieve the appropriate internal noise environment in any case, and the issue is vouching noise, and you can't mitigate the effects on that. So the your only option really is to avoid that development in the first place. But just to clarify, the point of my submission here was to correct what was a legally incorrect statement made by the judge.
I believe it now. Thank you for that.
Just to take that further, if we were to accept the Otago Planning Commission submission and recommend the land rezoning residential, what jurisdiction would the council have to impose any control on buildings outside the OCD and the use of them?
Well, the council
could. Any permitted activity?
Just to clarify, QAC's submission on that particular further submission issue, because that submission is it's not seeking to restrict development outside the OCD, because that land is influenced by the crosswind runway. QAC is only seeking that the PC35 approach be maintained for that land, and that land development be prohibited within the OCD.
So we could easily delete that paragraph without affecting your submissions, is that what you're saying?
Well, you could take out that whole section, if you like, rather than delete that paragraph, because that paragraph is responding to the legally incorrect statement made by Ms. Hutton. And so if you don't consider that that means that it's still responding, then
Ms. Hutton is necessarily legally incorrect. If we were to accept that the free zone residential is committed activity, she's not been correct. There is no jurisdictional basis to impose controls on a committed activity for something.
But the point is whether you choose to make that activity committed in the first place, and that's the point of my submission. She was suggesting, the way I read her evidence, that she's suggesting once you get to the OCD, that's at the airport, because no interest in anything beyond the OCD, and I'm saying, well, that's not the case. But there's evidence here, and if you're satisfied with your evidence that satisfies you that actually there's potentially a noise effect beyond the OCD, then that could be a basis for you to determine that residential activity is inappropriate.
Right. If there was an application, the airport company could get involved and make that case, is that what you're saying?
Yes. It's simply responding to the, perhaps, and I suspect that Ms. Hutton just didn't frame the point she was making as well as perhaps she could have. My point is that there is jurisdiction for the council to impose controls on noise considered with the OCP if it is satisfied that there's evidence which makes it appropriate to do so. And equally, it's open to QAC to make submissions on development beyond FN development beyond the OCP.
Yes, you just slipped out.
I will perhaps ask her a summary statement.
Assuming the microphone will record recording purposes, probably reduces the street interpretability in here as well. Sort of resonates around for those street that's going in.
Well, that's mainly because if you didn't have it with me, you wouldn't hear anything from making some speech so softly.
Right.
And I'm sitting here getting tinny noises.
Very tinny noises at the moment. Reduces the speech intelligibility rather than improves it.
That's an acoustic effect that should come and keep the larger effect in the hearing.
There's nothing you can do about the intelligibility of the speaker. Hearing of what they say.
I won't say anything.
Profitability is made up a key driver of the region of tourism industry and broader economy. QAC opposes numerous rezoning requests relating to land around Queen Stanley Port, but they give rise to potential adverse sensitivity effects of the airport. And where QAC considers that establishment of noise and activity will be detrimental to future occupants. Our submission is motivated by genuine concern to protect neighbouring communities. Residential activities and aircraft noise do not complement each other. And therefore, we do not encourage or support the establishment of these types of activities close to the airport with detrimental effects to develop over the longer term. Our opposition to the zoning remains for new and or other noise-sensitive activities located in the airport's noise boundaries is predicated on and consistent with NZS 605 and Plan Change 35. Our opposition to the zoning remains for new residential or other noise-sensitive activities located outside the airport's noise boundaries arises primarily because of the airport's future growth forecast and the potential for a significant increase in aircraft operations. QAC considers it would be irresponsible if it did not bring this to the panel's attention when it hears and decides submissions or proposed district plan, given that this is a long-term forward-thinking planning exercise. Month-on-month growth in passenger numbers has been sustained for a significant period of time and is predicted to continue for the foreseeable future. Passenger numbers have increased by 38% in the past 3 years alone, and in the 12 months ending June 2017, when facilitators totaled 1.89 million passengers, an increase of 15% compared on the previous 12 months to the previous 12 months. Current demand forecasts predict that annual passenger numbers have the potential to increase to 3.2 million by 2025. Initial indications from our 3-year monitoring program are that QAC will likely reach the noise levels requested by QC 35 noise boundaries prior to 2037, which is the planning horizon for those boundaries. We are currently reviewing the noise boundaries in relation to these growth forecasts and will progress changes to the noise planning framework if required in due course. We are mindful, however, that we need to manage our growth sustainably and in line with key stakeholder and community expectations. In relation to managing aircraft noise, QAC manages aircraft operations in accordance with its obligations under the designation and RMA so as to ensure that the community does not experience unreasonable levels of aircraft noise. This includes the ongoing implementation of the noise mitigation package to affected properties within the airport's noise boundaries, as required to ensure that all properties within these boundaries have assessed indoor noise environment. In addition, we actively engage with neighbouring community groups on issues of noise the community faces in relation to FCF operations and aircraft noise. We are currently undertaking master planning work for the airport, which takes a 30-year planning horizon and which, once finalised and adopted, will provide QAC with a roadmap to the implementation of airport developments. These developments will continue to serve the local community and region, deliver a unique visitor experience, maximise asset value, and generate sustainable growth and returns and value to the community and partners. Community engagement on the draft master plan options for community next month. QAC acknowledges that the nature of aircraft operations is they create noise which impacts on those living in the vicinity of the airport. We genuinely want to be a good neighbour to those residents and businesses living and operating around the airport. The focus, therefore, of our opposition to the various rezoning requests is on ensuring that as the airport grows, new noise-sensitive activities do not establish in close proximity to the airport, as this will inevitably result in a greater number of people potentially impacted by aircraft noise.
Paragraph 9 of your summary tells us that forecast predicts numbers to increase 3.2 million by 2025.
Yep.
Would the noise levels be reached by that point or after that point? Present noise boundary levels.
We are still doing quite a lot of work on where we believe the noise boundaries will be reached, but indications are that they will be well before that number of 3.2 million passengers.
Right, so before 2025 is what you're saying?
Yes.
And how much before?
That's not unfortunately, I can't. We haven't done the work to be able to provide that answer as yet.
Because that is, looks to me in rough terms is about an increase by a little way of a third on the amount of traffic you have at the moment. Is that a fair appraisal?
Yeah. Well, it doubles from the existing numbers. We're about 1.8 million passengers now, 1.89. Okay. So it almost doubles by the demand.
3.8 million, so
yep.
That's why I said it doubles a little over a third, because it's not quite, maybe 40%. Mm.
Just one, and I don't know whether this is fair. Legal submissions have been received from Universal Developments, and there's an article attached about the Crosswind runway and how it's been issued. Have you had a chance to look at the allegations with the statements in the legal submission?
No, I haven't read that.
Maybe they were wrong then. It was just a question really of there was an article from 2016 about the Queen's Town Airport Corporation, I think, reluctance to extend the lease for the aerostar. And there is nothing in the submission that says whether or not that lease was finally extended. So I'm quite interested in the use of the Crosswind runway in its future.
So the Crosswind,
so you can sort of make fill in the hole.
Yeah, sure. The Crosswind runway is used by fixed-wing aircraft, smaller fixed-wing aircraft that are sensitive to wind direction, obviously. The Aero Club would have utilised the Crosswind runway. They're no longer operating from Queenstown Airport in training capacity, but there was a commercial arm that was continuing to operate following the club leaving the ground. The Crosswind runway still continues to be used by flight sim operations generally and smaller fixed wing aircraft.
So the Aero Club
no longer does train, but they continue the commercial.
They did for some time.
They're not currently
operating from the airport at all.
No longer operates at all. Okay. What difference does that make to the noise environment? Oh, no, you can't answer that. I'm just curious, to the intensity of usage of the crosswind runway. The frequency of...
I can't answer that. I know it wouldn't have been quite a significant number of GA operators operating from Queenstown Airport, so it would have been a significant difference to the use of the crosswind runway.
And where are they now, just out of curiosity?
We're working with them they're wanting to re-establish themselves as a club. One of their options is to re-establish themselves at Wanaka Airport.
So what are they doing now? They're not flying at all?
They're still active as an organisation, but as a membership, but they don't have a home base at this point.
So where do they take off from?
I'm just curious where they will be. That was all I wanted to ask you, Chair. Commissioner Milne, in the evidence you dropped, paragraph 53, you tell us about complaints received.
Yes.
I just wondered whether the issue of the Quail Rise, I'm not really worried about the walking, but Quail Rise residents, is just a matter of aircraft flying too low. In other words, flying as if they're over rural areas than they're over an urban area. Is that the sort of issue that's raised by those complaints?
Yeah, so that can be part of it, or alternatively, the smaller aircraft are not following riverbed as the flight paths are cutting across the Quail Rise. So it's a matter of actively managing with those operators to ensure that they're compliant with Fly Friendly, which is
You do have a Fly Friendly program.
It is voluntary, but it is something that we actively promote and support with those air operators.
Queenstown Airport is relatively well located in terms of avoiding significant noise for the wider community. Apart from the group of houses at the western end of the airport, the noise contours for Queenstown Airport fall largely over Lake Wanaka. The river flats to the east and generally non-residential land to the north and south of the main runway. Implementation of the New Zealand Standard NZ 6805 is not just about reverse sensitivity and protecting the airport. It is also about avoiding the adverse effects of aircraft noise on people. Land use planning restrictions around airports are an effective means of avoiding more people being exposed to aircraft noise. A number of submitters have requested that specific land within the outer control boundary for Queenstown Airport be rezoned to enable residential or other noise sensitive activities to establish. I do not support these rezoning requests from a noise perspective because A, the New Zealand Standard recommends that new noise sensitive activities inside the OCB should be prohibited as a preferred starting position. B, the operative and proposed district plan follow this recommendation from NZ 605 and adopt prohibited activity status for new residential activity in rural zones inside the OCB. C, community response surveys show that 12% to 15% of the population are highly annoyed by aircraft noise levels of 55 dB/dBm. D, the general residential noise rules contained in the operative and proposed Queenstown Lake District plans suggest that noise levels above 50 dB/dBm are not a suitable residential noise environment. E, the installation of sound insulation in buildings does not eliminate all the effects of aircraft noise. New Zealanders generally do not like living in enclosed air conditioning houses without being able to open their windows, and opening the windows negates the effect of any noise mitigation in the tool. And F, the New Zealand has an outdoor culture and the sound insulation in buildings does not address outdoor amenities. In my opinion, the recommendations of NZ 605 should be upheld and new noise-sensitive activities should not be allowed to establish within the OCB for Queenstown Airport. A number of submitters have requested that land just outside the OCB be rezoned for noise-sensitive activities. I also do not support these rezoning requests because A, the noise effects do not stop suddenly at the out-of-control boundary, and the community response surveys and the QLDC noise rules show that there are adverse effects from noise between 50 and 55 dB. I have attached Appendix D from my primary evidence to show the gradual change in noise effects. It may be worth just pausing there and jumping to the next page, which is just a repeat of the appendix. And the reason we did that graph, and we did it some time ago, I think it was previously for the PC35, because people get very tied up with contours when we put noise contours on the ground, and think that once you step outside the out control boundary, which is a defined line, that there are no noise effects. And so this is just a gradual shading, with the density representing the higher noise levels. I think from memory, if you follow the contours right out, goes out as far as 48 dB, I think, is the last shading down on that left-hand tip. But it shows a gradual effect, and so everybody around this area, within that shaded area, are affected by aircraft noise. And it's not just a sudden cut-off. And what I'm also referring to in that paragraph, jumping back to paragraph 5A, and this has arisen through some of the questions this morning, is, and I think it's quite useful to look at, for a house that's in that 50 to 55 zone, the current noise rules for other industrial activities say that an industry isn't allowed to come along and make more than 50 dB on that house. So it doesn't seem logical to me that you would say you've got an existing house an existing plot of land, and you would allow somebody to come along and expose themselves to 52 or 53 dB of an existing commercial activity, i.e. the airport. If there's rules saying industry or commercial activity is not allowed to make more than 50 on any residential area, why would you let a new residential come along and establish and expose itself to 53 dB from an existing commercial activity? So that's what I'm referring to in 5A, and I refer to it a little further in terms of 3D, is what the general noise rules in the plan give us an indication that noise levels above 50 are not good for residential activities. So coming back to 5B now, the current level of growth in aircraft operations at Queenstown Airport is significantly greater than the 3% annual growth used in the forecasting for PC35 based on a forecast produced in 2008. Current indications are that the airport will likely reach the PC35 noise boundaries well ahead on those initial predictions, and it is likely these boundaries will need to be expanded sometime in the future. The properties just outside the OTB may in the long term, if currently expected growth transpires, be exposed to moderately high levels of aircraft noise. In my opinion, these properties are marginal for noise-sensitive activities, and I consider a precautionary approach should be adopted when considering the appropriateness of new noise-sensitive activities in these locations. Finally, I note that the notified noise boundaries contain a small error, which should be corrected in accordance with the QAC submission on this issue.
Just going back to your comment in 5A, this question anyway, is 15 dB LBN the same as 50 dB LAEQ, 15 minutes?
Basically it is. It's the same as 50 daytime and 40 nighttime, because the normal residential rules provide it in that way. They provide 50 daytime and 40 nighttime. And LBN basically takes the LEQ every hour and applies a 10 dB penalty at night. Mm-hmm. So it's effectively a 50-40 LEQ rule. So it's virtually the same.
Right. The difference is that it's taking an hour instead of 15 minutes.
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, in a way, the district plan rule is slightly more stringent, because in some 15-minute periods, the airport, if you measure the airport, yeah, and in some others, it's noisier.
Mm.
So the average over the hour comes out at 50, or the 24 hours comes out at 50. But it can actually, in the 15-minute, produce more noise. And so again, why would you go and put a residential in that environment that the regular district plan noise limits say is not suitable for residential?
Your original script. And what I'm interested in is comparing the definition of an activity-sensitive aircraft noise in the district plan with the standard NZS 6804, so paragraph 26. I just wanted to know what we're talking about when we restrict these things in the rules of the plan.
Yeah, I mean, it does differ from district to district what they require, so...
Yeah, we're working on a moving fix here because there's been hearings on definitions and things. But here in you're quoting the standard, and it refers to new residential school properties or other noise sensitive services prohibited.
Yeah.
Is there a convention about the other noise sensitive uses and what it means? Because if you like, I can read out what I think the definition is from the plan for an AC.
Yeah.
And then we can compare alternatives.
Yes, well, as I say, it differs in every district, and the standard obviously leaves it open in a way. It's no more definitive than
yes.
It obviously considers residential schools and hospitals, are definitely
yes.
And then leaves it open to the
yes.
district to it. And the one with visitor accommodation is the one that varies widely as well, and we've talked about that hearings before here. So, and I have a copy of the definitions in the plan.
Yes, the plan is publicly notified, all the councils to apply a version of them.
The plan is publicly notified, but I don't believe the definition of that plan
changed.
I think there was only one,
including road noise and
minor thing, educational facilities. We changed to educational activity, I think, was the only. Yes, and the road noise added to it, yes.
So, this is certified destination so the definition is approved by the
Sorry, what's your question?
Well, because in the standard, the other non-technical uses and what their scope is.
Yeah.
Because residential schools and hospitals are clearly happening.
Yeah.
And then I think you answered me by saying that local story district plans to interpret what other non-technical uses are in the context of a particular district.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah, I was just trying to get alignment and figure
right.
out what was intended by other non-technical uses.
That might be a question for Mr. Carr, because he was actually wrote those definitions. So
I just thought when you went out measuring, you would need to know what it was. So
it really just comes down to what you say of how you define them and which ones become reasonable. When we're measuring, it doesn't change anything, but it's really a planning issue on what you're going to decide to prohibit. And so I think Mr. Carr's planning issue would be better to.
That'll be fine.
Great.
Educate me about that later. In paragraph 76 of your original, this is the one on noise monitoring. And it's very tempting to me when you write the results for 2016 monitoring has just been prepared to ask, can we see them, please? Walt relied on evidence about, the development, the effects of the current airport and its future, and how there was a case to be made. I haven't seen much of that evidence, and I wonder if the evidence draws here that would be useful.
Yes. That information will become public, obviously, when it sort of gets submitted to the council, but I'm just not clear at this stage whether it's been submitted as yet.
It's submitted by the Armand Gable Committee, which the council's have commented.
That doesn't give it to us.
Yeah.
Well, the only way it's going to get to us is if it's given to us now.
Sure.
Does this monitoring include both sides of the ledger, in other words, the airport operations side, and also the effects of noise in the environment? And the two legs of the purposes of NZSFA?
Yeah,
I'm assuming the obviously, so I don't know what it is.
No, right.
Other than standards.
Yeah, the two legs are the noise management, which is this monitoring, and then the other is land use planning, which is really what we're talking about today. So the what you allow in the noise boundaries and outlets and all that sort of stuff. So the noise management thing is this, which gets provided every year, and it's done in the form of producing noise contours from the actual number of movements. So these 2016 results include all the movements from last year. The busiest 3 months get shoved into the model and calculated contours,
yeah,
and check whether they're inside the future contours, and it's recalibrated and checked with measurements at certain positions as well. So that's the noise management of the standard.
And do you, or whoever, does it provide some interpretation and explanation of those results, or do they get addressed in a process that follows?
It's an annual report, and I just get confused with all the different airports trying to remember, but this one gets presented via the Noise Liaison Committee and the Council, and so it's a report that explains exactly how it's done, where the monitoring is done, and what the noise management procedures are.
Okay. and some interpretation of them, you know, or some explanation as to issues or not visibilism, you know, some explanation that allows everyone to understand the significance of the stuff.
Yes, I'm just trying to remember, and what I can do over the break is try and get a hold of the last one and just see how much explanation there is. But certainly attempts to explain the LDN concept is my memory, and which is always difficult for lay people to understand, and what differences in noise level mean, and the fact that the contours are 2 dB inside the future contours at the moment, or whatever it is.
It's exactly the sort of information that would substantiate the points made in the
legal submission. Well, I'll check that at the same time as we're checking whether those 2016 monitoring is available, and we'll obviously check what's in that report and come back to you on both of those issues.
Well, I'm just wondering whether. Certainly there's no reason why we couldn't be given the 2015 one.
Absolutely.
So maybe if we could be given that and the 2016 at all possible.
Yep.
It would be super, thank you. And in a random step, the crosswind runway again. We've heard, I think, in the submissions from people who are complaining about it from the Satan Black side. Has there been any complaints from the Coney Valley side?
I'm not familiar with the detail of exactly where the complaints have come from, so.
Okay, good. And and again, this is a very specific question. Mr. Gillen, who was submitted in McBride Street, which is under the ASIC, he said he'd taken voice measurements on one occasion inside his house at 70 to 75 dB, but you know, it wasn't clear what kind of dB measurement it was.
Right.
Did any conclusion can be drawn from a measurement like that?
I don't think so. Look, it's most likely be on an iPhone.
I wonder how it didn't.
There's several apps available now, and some of them, we did a review of them a couple of years ago, and they're trying to reasonably accurate for certain types of noise and not so accurate for other types. But I'm just thinking, well, that would be, we've done a lot of noise measurements inside a particular house in McBride Street, which is owned by the airport company, and we've had monitoring station outside. It's one of our monitoring stations at McBride Street in terms of the external noise. And the noise mitigation study that's going on at the moment for residents inside high noise areas has involved some measurements inside and outside of existing houses. But 70 plus seems unlikely to me. Sorry. Yeah. And in any case, it'll be a single event, rather than the LDN. So
he didn't say it was anything else.
Yeah. So he won't be able to, leaving aside the accuracy, he won't be able to convert that into an LDN measure, which is just taking the energy over the whole day from all aircraft, not just one.
Thanks. That's it. Okay. You're talking about paragraph 3c about community response surveys. I'm just wondering to what extent some of those surveys might have been involved with airports. Such as Christchurch, for example, there's a lot more going on than that.
Yes, most of those surveys would include be based on airports that where activity was taking place at night. And it's a little bit hard to do the comparison, but in a way we take faith in this LDN measure that has this really heavy weighting of 10 dB. So the way to get your head around this 10 dB penalty factor is that one flight of a 737 at night has the same impact on the LEM as 10 flights during the daytime. So that's a 10 times factor, that's 10 dB. So in terms of community annoyance, that's found to be a reasonable basis. So you get one flight at night, and it's about as annoying as 10 flights during the daytime. So I think that the media takes that into account, although it is a difference between, you're quite right, between where most of those studies would have been done.
Yeah. And some of the major airports have maintenance going on at night as well, and agencies.
Yes, that's...
And that's a particular issue in Christchurch, you always think.
Yes, it's a particular issue, and it's been dealt with a separate set of rules, and the last replacement district plan hearing really concentrated primarily on that issue, and there's a whole new regime of controls on engine testing at Christchurch.
I mean, you and I both know that the operators don't observe the rules for other, do they? Pull the aircraft out of the hangar and run out the engines rather than tow it all the way across the other side of the airport.
I think we probably agree that they didn't comply with the previous rules, which was a bylaw, and they didn't comply with that in strict accordance. But this new regime is very much more stringent and controlled, and there's a whole procedure where every day, every morning, the results are being published on the going to be published on the internet.
And but that won't be showing up in the community noise survey, is it? The ones that you're relying on.
No, they're specific studies, but at other specific times and inquiries and whatever.
Okay, just getting back to the LDN. Mm-hmm. I mean, the member of the public who's significantly annoyed has no idea what the disability doesn't understand LHU, LDN, any of it. Is the ill. They just know that there's a plane that comes over at 1 o'clock in the morning every night and wakes them up. I mean, what's the effect of when you say the LDN measure really deals with that, does it?
It doesn't deal with it perfectly, but it's the best we've got. And in the 30 years that I've been working in aircraft noise, nobody's come up with a more effective measure. And I agree, it is a difficult one to get across. The one new measure that's come out that's been used in Australia, and I haven't seen it adopted anywhere else, and it's been out in Australia for about 6 or 7 years now, and I haven't seen it adopted anywhere else, but is a measure that just counts the number of aircraft noise events above 70 dB. So it's saying when an aircraft event is 72 dB or 75 dB, you'll hear it inside your house and you'll notice it. And the measure says we don't care whether that's 72 dB or 92 dB, it's an aircraft event. And it's the number of those that is important. And so it's called N70, number of events above 70, and it just counts those numbers. Unfortunately, they haven't gone the next step and said, well, what's a reasonable number of events for somebody to experience and whatever. But we've started using it in our assessment of effects for people. And talking about people, about changes in aircraft noise. Previously you had 20 events a day, and with this change to the runway configuration, you're going to have 20 events per day. So it's quite useful in that, because the LEM, getting back to your original question, is very difficult to explain to people. And the way I do try to get it across is that it is a measure of your total noise dose, because I think it is worth getting an aircraft event, two aircraft events at 92 dB, versus 10 events at 70 dB. It is quite a different effect. The noise level and the number of events come into it. And all the LDN does is sum the total energy to take into account.
I mean, I'm thinking that, you know, my hypothetical resident possibly not worried about the noise during the day. It's only the noise at night, which is which is causing the grief.
Yeah, that certainly doesn't seem to be the case. Previous hearings, we've had people from around that Franklin area come along and make submissions, and the noise does bother them. And complaints, now these hearings are quite good for bringing out that, because complaints aren't a true indicator of community response. Yeah. And you only really get the community response when you go into the community and ask them how annoyed have they been about aircraft noise in the last month. And because there's people in Wellington Airport that's elderly and 75, and they never complain. Because they bought a house looking through the wire mesh of the airport fence, and in fact most of them had rented it. But they moved in there knowing, because the larger aircraft, the wind almost comes over the top of it, one attacks it. People don't complain in that situation. It's the ones at Auckland Airport, it's the ones further out actually that do more of the complaining. And it's in this 50 to 55 band we would get more complaints than we do in the 65 band.
Having lived once for 6 months, very in town road and traffic, very, very close to the end of the runway. So it's an interesting dynamic because the landing and takeoff is over in a couple of seconds and there's a roar, it's gone. Whereas if you're living further out at Wellston or Clark or something, you hear the aircraft at a lower level for much longer. So I'm not surprised about what you said there.
And that's where I think the LDN is a better measure, because it takes into account that duration. So that will have a larger contribution to the LDN, because it's a long duration, and would it for the same level of a shorter duration. So it does have to take that into account.
Now going back to your main evidence, and I just want to say natural for a minute.
Sorry.
I want to sort of generalise this discussion and head out beyond Queenstown at the moment and get some understanding of the international situation, because this effect of ever expanding noise conquerors. It's been going on everywhere, and I've been around long enough to see two generations of it in Christchurch, and you must have seen more, probably.
It's generally two to three generations,
isn't it? Yeah, I mean, it happens. And every time there's new modelling, invariably it expands something. It might contract somewhere else, but inevitably the expansion is, but then what happens to those areas that are and suddenly already developed, and then inside the new ICB.
Well, unfortunately, it means there's more people exposed to what I consider unreasonable levels of aircraft noise, so that's one consequence. And the second is there's potential reverse sensitivity from that. But just stressing one of the principles in your argument there, that Christchurch is a perfect example, is I have done two generations. They're about to go on the third generation, but the second generation at Christchurch, if you remember, cut back a really significant area of the contour south to the northwest. There was, with the old hush pillars, 77, they were taken off to the northwest, and there was a large spike in the contours out there, and they actually came in that area. But generally, a couple of things have happened with the modelling over the years, going from the first generation to the second generation, is that the contours have generally, the same in the Christchurch, shortened a little bit and widened. And that's partly due to the improvements in aircraft technology and the 747s drifting out of operation, but partly due to the improved modelling techniques, accuracy.
Yeah. But this must have, I mean, you are anticipating it's happening. We're going to get this problem in Queenstown. And it has happened in Christchurch, and no doubt it's happened at Auckland and Wellington, and with expanding contours, and it just gets absorbed, the problem just gets absorbed at that point.
Well, our starting point is that we have a number of houses in there, inside there, the contours, and we have to deal with that. And so expanding will get a few more. But that
basically if the community, overall community, wants to grow, that's a byproduct. What we want to try and avoid is increasing the number of people that are exposed due to bad land use planning. And this has happened in Auckland. There's been more people exposed to moderate levels of aircraft noise due to residential growth than there have been by expansion of the contours. So one you can avoid, in my opinion, and the other, assuming the community wants to grow, you can't avoid.
I was just looking at the planning maps briefly, further on, looking at that OCB boundary, and you'll be familiar with it, if, as you suggest, or as you're anticipating, that the contours will expand, there's quite a lot of existing zoned lands will be covered. For example, in Shot Over Country, or on down the Remarkables, and down at our best day in Shot Over Country, we were.
Watching
the aircraft, you can't imagine
when
you're on the
plane
traveling from the other side of the ground. I'm not the owner of the property and I never signed anything. I'm just taking a piece of it. So it just occurs to me that most of the relatively small sites that you're opposing, there must be a lot more that are going to go under the new contours already developed.
Yes, there will be more, and it is really unfortunate because we're literally right in the middle of this master planning process. My guys back in the office are literally at this moment. We've got flight paths from Airways last week and are in the process of inputting the data for the new future growth scenarios from the master planning process. And so in a relatively short amount of time, months, we're going to have this information available. So unfortunately, it's not available now.
And you may well be aware of this, particularly you may not be concerned enjoying taking part in the numerous previous hearings on this topic, but QAC does mitigate its noise effects and then its retrofit. Noise insulation and mechanical ventilation to those existing properties within the OCB, which is the contour, and then the AMB, which is the 65, and it does so at its cost. And so any future noise plan change, if that transpires, QAC will need to assess whether it continues its approach or adopt a similar approach, but it does mitigate its increased noise.
Sorry, I understood maybe why is it that mitigation went out to the 65 contour.
No, that's the 60.
Yeah, 60.
And QAC fully funds mechanical insulation, mechanical ventilation and noise insulation out to the 65, and that is to achieve an internal noise level of 40 dBLU based on the protected noise level of 2037. And it part funds is 75% mechanical ventilation and property out to the 60 dB. And that 60 is the 60 as it is predicted to be 2037.
Something like 12 houses have been done so far within the AMB. Does that happen as a result of complaint?
No, there's a regime in the QAC designation which says when it needs to mitigate. It needs to offer that mitigation prior to that noise level hitting that property. So it's one step ahead of that noise getting to that property. If the property has the treatment fitted for the noise level, that's it.
So
just finishing on that, so it's ties in with these 2015-2016 compliance contours, then have some growth added for next year, and that becomes the contours that determine who gets the installation package.
Can you have a, this is going to be a hard question, even for me to formulate, and it's probably worse for your answer, but can you give us sort of any idea of how bad this is going to be?
I can't really, but just a gut feel from the numbers of the passenger numbers and whatever, and the rough numbers I've seen of it could be a 3 dB expansion, it might be a 5 dB expansion. It'll be that sort of order of magnitude, but it'll vary in different places. It won't be consistent around everywhere, but it's going to be in that sort of order of expansion. And when you're looking at a new 30-year prediction, it's going to be, say, 3 to 5 dB. It's going to be something in that range.
Now, some of the requested rezonings, residential rezonings, are at quite high densities. Using medium density residential or high density residential. Does the outdoor lifestyle apply so much, particularly in the high density area? Considering that a lot of that will inevitably end up as visitor accommodation.
Yeah. It's an interesting question that's been debated again at some of the other airports, whether you're better off going for a low density and, let's say, 1 to 12 hectares of the grassroots pendulum. But that people will be using significant outdoor, but you have less people exposed, or putting it into high density and having more people exposed when they do open their windows, as I mentioned in my evidence. New Zealanders don't like living in, you imagine being in Queenstown in the summer and having to sit inside with your air conditioning on and not enjoy that wonderful crisp outdoor air in the spring and autumn and whatever. So if you go for the high density, then you have more people exposed to that. So there's arguments either way, and my answer is generally it's just it's better to avoid exposing those people to noise if you can pay for it.
Just going back to the community response survey, have any community response surveys ever been done in Queenstown?
Not to my knowledge, no.
Is there any feedback through the liaison committee that would give you any understanding of the community response here?
I don't attend those, but you've attended a few, do you get any feedback?
It tends to concentrate all the time on opportunity for those that have made complaints to come through and discuss their complaints and get responses to those, so it's probably less indicative of the general community response.
And from what you said, those complaints tend to be one-off helicopter or airplanes.
That's correct.
More than residual services.
Probably through the PC35 process, which started back in 2008, was one of the biggest indications we've had around community response generally.
Yes.
I think a couple of chaps called Porter, I think his name was, who complained a lot.
Sense of noise.
Yeah, very, very sensitive. They perhaps should be added into the definition.
I'm just wondering whether, in fact, it might be a slightly different environment than somewhere like Christchurch, in that sense, whether there would be some value in the airport company doing some sort of survey, because it seems to me that the industry here relies on scheduled services, and it doesn't seem to me that there's much complaint about the scheduled services. There might be some correlation between those two things, but it would need a survey to establish that.
The survey in Christchurch, my memory was it was jointly funded by the council and the airport company. And, certainly, I'd welcome if you suggested to the council or authorities that they implement. Initiate something along those lines, it would be, I think it would be worthwhile to some.
I have one follow-up one from Mr. Mountford's question about outdoor activities. And that's where I was going with that question about what are other noise sensitive uses. Because at some point, recreation is excluded from the definition of an asset. So at Franklin Plants, there's the Queenstown Event Centre, and people can go and play football for an hour and a half and change for over and over and over.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, where on that continuity of exposure when you're outside, do you draw a line?
Well,
It is difficult, but the way we look at it in the past, and out in that Franklin Flats area, there was a big debate about the school about 3 years ago, and I think that was in front of a different hearing panel or the environment. Do you remember?
I certainly want to see
it. Yeah, it was big indeed, you've got the various situations within the school. You've got the, obviously, the classrooms are clearly a noise sensitive activity. Then you go to the straight sports field, and is that not sensitive like that? And then the in-between one is that they use those fields for a large amount of education these days, so they're actually communicating and whatever, and that's it. You've got to stop talking and for 30 seconds or whatever while the aircraft flies over. And maybe a sports field for the regular public, they can now go back to your example, away from the school. If you know you're training and you've got a coach who's trying to communicate, then maybe that does become, whereas if you're playing a game, it's just as if there was a loud, a noisy crowd that's beating perfect, and you can't communicate with you.
I haven't answered that question,
but
I don't think the definition of FM includes recreational.
No, no, that's right.
Yeah.
And you mean it. I was just trying to figure out where on the sliding scale between that and other noises that you
And there's been big debates around here as well about sort of recreation of golfers being affected by aircraft noise out of the skydive thing. There was a big debate on that. So,
but there's never been anyone who plays that international cricket with the stadium next to the airport.
No. So it's a highly variable one, and I think that's a very difficult area to get into on who's in the recreational activity, who's in the, and straight at the top of the gondola here, the big debate about the helicopter landings up there and the adjacent users, the zip trek, and the mountain bikes, and that they were talking about very high noise levels up there of only in 1665. So,
Thank you.
Great. Thank you. We'll adjourn until 11:55.